for just about everything for the outdoors. Go to MidwayUSA.com. At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Welcome to Blue Collar Elk Hunting, brought to you by ElkGrows.com, with your host Gilbert Ornelas and elk hunting coach Joe Gilly. You want to hunt elk, and they live to hunt elk. Their goal is to share with you what they have learned grinding it out for over 35 seasons doing what they love. So come on into camp and set a spell. Welcome to Blue Collar Elk Hunters.
Elk Camp 2022, y'all. It's been absolutely wild up here in the mountains in New Mexico. As you can see here, I'm with the band of characters. We've got the legend R.C. Knox in the house. We got Cody Kirkpatrick with us, our Elk Bros 2022 recipient of the hunt, who won to come in here and invade the Elk Bros camp and be one with the Elk Bros. We've talked about doing this, Joe, for many years. We got the ninja, Mr. Leroy Chavez in the house, and WWJGD sitting right here, my main man. We got the Venezuelan Mafia in the house, Mr. Luis Gonzalez and Manano Graterons in the house. We got everybody in here. We got a new addition to the team. Come on in here, Mr. Victor Silva. Come on in here, a.k.a. Vitoco, and one of the baddest cooks on the planet.
Bend down a little bit here.
This guy's been cooking for us all week. He's been putting up with our bull crap, and he's been one of the best guys to have here in camp. We can't thank him enough. It's been truly special. He's one of the Mafia's homeboys that they brought in, and I'm telling you what, everything he's done has been super cool. Am I not lying, guys?
No, that's been awesome.
National champion, though.
Yeah, sure. he's a world champion shooter with shotgun, sporting clays, skeet. I mean, the guy's an avid outdoorsman, a heck of a musician, sings, plays the guitar. I mean, the guy's been an epic individual to have in camp. We can't thank you enough, my brother.
Maybe at the end of the podcast, we should close out with music from
Vitoco.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Vitoco. Get your guitar. Get ready, baby.
Come on. Al final del podcast vas a improvisar con el cuadro.
Sí. Ah,
okay. Por favor.
Cerrar con música tuya.
Cualquier
pasada. Seguro. You guys, this is as organic as it gets. Y'all been with us on several rides here in Elk Camp, and I'm telling you, this has not been short of any wild things going on. I've had a time getting up here. My truck's in the shop. I kind of blew up the radiator and everything else, so we've had some challenges getting up here and getting started, but I'll roll with the greatest team in the world. You know, the legend R.C. Knox stepped up, helped me. Joe, everybody has filled in and helped me feel comfortable without all of my gear. That truck's a big part of it. But we got it all up here on the mountain and got everything started off, guys. Got to meet some incredible people, Mr. Cody Kirkpatrick and his father, Kevin. Shout out to Mr. Kirkpatrick, couldn't be with us. He's back in the Elk Woods, knocking it out day by day.
He's up in Colorado.
Yeah, y'all's home place up in Colorado. He's out there, you know, doing his thing. It was so fun to have him in camp. He's a unbelievable gentleman.
Yeah.
Tells stories like you wouldn't believe. You know, I generally can tell a pretty good story, but I got lots to learn from guys like that. So, he's a fantastic, fantastic father, a fantastic outdoorsman. So it's been great having these guys in camp.
He's the only guy I know has ever called an elk in with a ratchet.
Yeah, we'll get to that for sure. He's made the impossible possible. That's for sure. When you done something like that, you know, I get to hunt with all of these guys, so I'm very privileged. But one of the things that I really wanted to say to each and every one of them is, I value each and every one of your friendships.
Yeah.
And being here on this mountain, whether we kill, you know, 10 out of 10 bulls or whatever it is, we're going to have fun doing it. And we've had an exceptional time this time. It's so cool to see the ninja back in the woods every day, hunting, doing his thing. And, you know, thanks to all the guys that helped make that happen.
For sure.
Chad's back in the woods. I watched him do about a 2-mile hike, you know, in and out almost every day, and he just killed it. So from where he was in 2019 to where we are today, 2020, I mean, it's day and daylight and dark, and we praise God. Thanks everybody for all their prayers, and you know, there's a couple people that we want to talk about.
We've had people all week texting us all the time.
Yeah.
You know, Mike Bozarth, you know, he scores, takes
Shane
a cow
Rasmussen.
Out there.
Yeah.
Shane Rasmussen takes a beautiful bull over
Congrats,
there.
Congrats, Shane.
Our own guys, man, our coaches, Eric.
Oh, yeah.
Aragon.
Yeah.
Him and his guy, done. Man, they score big.
The Flatlander, Cole Wilson, gets it done. In Idaho, him and Joel, I mean, unbelievable.
Travis.
Kills a 6x6. Yeah.
O'Shea.
Travis. O'Shea getting it done up there in Canada.
Travis is just, you know, we kind of do that when we're callers. We play a caller role, and you end up trying to get other people. And that's what Travis has been doing. He's not shooting. He's calling, you know. And I think they've taken 2 or 3 already.
Yeah.
You know, so they're doing big out there. And we're getting all kinds of emails and different things from different people. But, you know, the guy that you're talking about, somebody that has touched our heart that
Charles
we got
Presley.
An email, is Charles Presley. And Charles is... Him and his family have gone through it. You know, their daughter Abigail went through a lot of operations from birth, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and, I mean, this is a guy that, you know, it's so funny. I mean, it puts things in perspective. I mean, we have a lot of things. Chav helped put things in perspective for
Absolutely.
Us, you know. Each one of us has found things in our lives that put things in perspective. And, you know, Charles was somebody followed us and was excited about getting the elk woods, had a new daughter coming into the world, and life got put on hold.
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
But Abigail is...
killing it.
She's doing awesome.
Fantastic.
It's awesome to see that family. So Charles is out in the woods now, man. So
It's awesome to see how the good Lord's working in their lives after all the prayers and everything. So shout out to Mr. Presley and Abigail. Y'all keep killing it. Keep grinding. It's been wild up here, fellas. I mean, we'll just dive right in as we got started from day one. And, man, you know, it's a new unit that we're hunting, Joe.
Yeah.
Super new. You and RC put boots on the ground when, you know, doing as much scouting as you could. And then once we really dove into the intricacies of the unit, it got real, real quick, didn't it, Joe?
Yeah, so, I mean, all of us. I mean, every one of the group and every one of the guys – you know, you don't need to hear it from me. You know, so what was the biggest deal for you guys, the biggest shakeup?
Lowdowns.
Lowdowns. That's a new thing for me. I think it's a phenomenal deal.
So,
I didn't know before, so I got to learn.
In the winter here, they had a winter storm. There are microbursts that come through here that, you know, and microbursts have been, you know, tracked at over 300 plus miles an hour winds. So it came through here in biblical proportions.
Yes. I mean, they call it
Widowmakers.
Widowmakers, yeah. We've got several pictures that I'm sure Joe will edit into this podcast and just show the devastation on the sides of these ridges that made it so difficult for us to navigate and understand the road systems and stuff like that.
And, the difference between fall down and
deadfall.
So everybody, when everybody talks about deadfall, we all know what deadfall is, and everybody's used to stepping over deadfall. But, you know, it's so funny. When we came out and we did our scouting, you know, we're checking the road systems, checking where we would be jumping off from. You do your e-scouting, checking where certain trails are and where certain places and starting to get the camp set up. But we never really got up into some of these sides. We went into some places and they were fine, but, man, I tell you what. So, blowdowns, you know, when you were talking about that epic thing happening, I think it was 3 days of that event, wasn't it, RC? Because you had to deal with that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, it tore up power lines. It did everything, but...
Y'all were without power for how long, RC?
A month.
A month. 1 month without power. And this is serious down here when it's in 20 degrees below zero and stuff. I mean, you know, you better have a lot of wood cut.
Yeah. So it was all western, southern, and... top plateaus that caught wind.
Mostly.
Yeah. Right?
Because there were some other faces that were, you know, got probably northeast and that also got hammered too.
It just bended it through the canyons and stuff, but it is so epic. I can't wait for Joe to send up the photos that we took.
So
y'all will see it.
Take a look at this picture right here, and this will give you an idea. And here, I'm going to, here's the picture. Now, I want you to check out this video. This is a video of the mafia trying to navigate and climb over, right? And so we're talking about trees. It looks like pixie sticks, but these are completely mature.
Massive trees.
Top massive trees that just blown on top of each other and created 5, 6, 7, 8 foot walls.
Yeah, and at some point we were actually walking on logs that were, you know, 4, 5, even 6
off
foot
the
off
ground. Yeah.
And it just becomes so dangerous because it's crazy how it, you know, you're walking through the woods, you have no blowdowns, and all of a sudden you see some trees and you're like, well, it's probably clear on the other side, and then you get into it, and then it keeps sucking you in, you know, and then you realize you're in the middle of these blowdowns, and it becomes dangerous because, you know, these trees break, the branches break, what you think is stiff, it isn't, and if it parts, then you can, you know,
because these aren't dead trees, these are
live trees.
They were live trees. Yeah. So they have complete foliage on them, all their branches, except for what's broken through the fall, right?
420 yards took us
an hour and a half.
Yeah.
400 yards. Yeah. Hour and a half, Joe.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, some slopes, the whole uphill. All the trees are down.
Our legs show the results of it, too. We're all beat up and scarred and nicked and bloody. And I mean, we've all been through it. You know, from day one, we knew it was going to take boots on the ground, you know, divide and conquer. And this group is, I'm telling you, you cannot keep this group out of them when they get their nose to the grindstone and start grinding.
Well,
you know,
the problem, though, is not only was it difficult for us, but it was so difficult for the elk that a lot of the elk moved out of the area.
Right.
We're right next to another unit that is it's a once in a lifetime elk hunting unit, and a lot of the elk migrated there, went down lower, went to other places. Now, are there still elk in here? Well, we've managed to have encounters.
Yeah.
You know, we've managed to do that, which, man, I tell you, when you're working that hard, when you are having to climb over stuff, when you get stuck in things, it becomes frustrating. Ooh, it becomes disheartening.
Defeating.
It becomes brutal at times. Man. So our issue, I mean, Cody, day one, Day one. So Cody and Kevin and I had first ups with Cody and his dad, and we had a plan. We had a plan of where we wanted to go, where we wanted to be, and that was just it. We had plans A, B, C, D, you know, and y'all, we ended up going to like M, N, O.
Yeah, L-O-P.
And really trying to work. Here's a photo. Check out this photo. How do you find elk in New Mexico when you're struggling? Here's a picture of my Venezuelan pointer and finding elk for me. So I want you to see this picture. Like, got a great picture of Manano up on the mountain, man, pointing out where elk are. It was a great one. But our issue was really, it was compounded in that we had a lot of animals that moved out. We're trying to figure out now how the animals are moving differently. And, oh, we're getting rained on.
Look at here. As always, this is a real deal.
Yeah.
It's rain.
We got rain, man.
I know one of the guys coined this hunt as the one more step hunt. And I think they'll explain to you what they meant by that.
I got to say something before the mafia gets started. I got an opportunity to hunt with these two cats. And I've known Luis since he started elk hunting and started calling. And I got to hunt with him the other day. And this guy has gotten so good, man. His calling techniques, the way he sets things up. He pretty much ran our hunt when they let me come hunting with him, drag my butt up and down the mountain. But this guy's gotten so good. So I'll let him tell you exactly what went on with their one step close to being heroes, right?
Yeah. I gotta say publicly, but I gotta reinforce that
what my statement was.
Yes.
I will say
it's painful.
I'll always be your leader, bro.
Hey, leader, step up, and this cat really has, man. So, for real.
No, I'll tell you what, we always joke back and forth about, you know, the leader, but, you know, it's, I told Manano this trip too, that I was pretty impressed. So, nobody really knows this, but Manano got here with a bad cold, and he was pretty sick the first 3 days, and we had to go through some really tough terrains, and, you know, the altitude hits you really fast, for us flatlanders. And, man, he, you know, especially on day two, and we'll talk about it. I mean, the hike that we had to go through, it was tough. And Manano hadn't been able to be, like, working out as much because he's been preparing for his test and all.
Manano doesn't work out, dude.
I think that hike was intentional, yo.
But I mean, I told him, I said, dude, I admire your willpower and your ability to just work through, you know, the challenges of these hunt, because, you know, I don't know that I would have been able to do it while sick that.
We got him some drugs, though. He bowed. I'm serious.
Medicine.
Yeah, medicine. We got him medicine. We got him some medicine.
That's better.
Big O carries the international drug kit with him when he travels. I mean,
you got the cure.
I'm susceptible to getting upper respiratory infections, stuff like that. So
he's allergic to everything.
Yeah, I am. My shadow, I'm allergic to. When he came to us and said he was not feeling well, and this is big for him because this guy's, you know, he's a private person, and, you know, he's very prideful, and he don't want to slow the group down. So it was very humbling for him to even say that, hey, man, I might need a little help. And so we got him some medicine, and he's been on demand ever since. And
yeah. Thank you, Beto.
They're a force to be reckoned with.
He worked through it. And,
yeah.
And the very first day, talking about the one-step hunt, we decided to go up this ridge that we kind of found attractive on the map. And so we parked our four-wheeler down, and we started working our way up. And it was pretty steep. So day one, we were like, whoo, wake up call, man. We're back at it. This is, so we work our way up there. We're seeing some sign, and we're just kind of walking around and slowly calling and just exploring the terrain. And, just when we got to the top, you know, we always remember what Joe says. I mean, You do it like the animals do it. You know, you're tired, you stop, you rest. You're sleepy, you take a nap. You know, you're hungry, you stop and eat. And so we got to the top and we were a little tired. And
We got breakfast?
Yeah, we sat down and had some breakfast at the very, you know, top of this little ridge.
Right, and then you started changing the diaphragm.
Yeah, I had different diaphragms that I wanted to try that... And so I was using the grinder, and I was trying the sugar, and I just kind of wanted to feel the differences between the diaphragms. And I'm messing with it, and all of a sudden, Manano turns around and tells me, "Did you hear that?" I said, "No." Manano, as usual, has really keen ears and eyes in the woods, right? So I said, "No, I didn't." He's like, "That was a bark. Keep calling." So I kept on calling, and sure enough, man, this bull bugled. Right, and we're like, "Oh my God, this is what we're on right off
he
the bat."
Wasn't, but he cow calls. Well.
Yeah, yeah, he was cow calling like too.
Yeah, he mewed.
He mewed. Yeah, several times actually.
Yeah. Yes, there's so many people, man, that think that when they hear a mew, it's just a cow.
It's not,
and it's not, especially early season like this, man. And even when you get in tight, you know, when they're around their cows, they'll mew as well.
Yeah, but he made it sound like the word several, mm-hmm. like several times in different pitch. Mm-hmm. So. He got me. I thought, okay, we got like at least a bull.
Yeah, a few more coming.
A few more or several cows or something. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, and by the way, it was a beautiful country.
It was a beautiful country. There's an inside joke about that. But anyhow, so Manano immediately, I mean, the wind was right. This bull was coming from the side skirt of that top like where we were at.
Yeah,
it's
like
a little saddle.
A saddle? Mm-hmm. Aspen tree and
so Manano dives down and gets into the thick brush, and I kind of stayed back. It was a little open on the top, but I covered myself with one of the roots of them blowdowns, one of the trees, and I continue to call, and I hear crashing and stuff like that. Manano saying, "You saw him coming."
Yeah, he was coming like jumping logs, you know, like really really you know, he was coming, like, mm-hmm. straight up.
Yeah.
And and then I got him like 40, 50 yards, and then he went behind a pine tree. Mm-hmm. And I saw him like do like this, and then like, you know, he was alert. Just because Luis was like, he got the skyline. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So all of a sudden I heard something breaking behind. I wasn't sure he was breaking the tree or something, but the bull kept, you know, watching Luis, and he was like, boom.
Yeah,
and I had like a, you know, like little window, was 40-something.
Yeah.
Within 40 yards. Mm-hmm. But I didn't have any opportunity to,
it was thick.
To take a shot.
So, you know, and my mistake there was, as I was calling, I heard it coming, and all of a sudden... You know, it got to a point where Manano moved forward and I couldn't see Manano. And then I couldn't hear the bull. So I'm like, well, two things, right? I want to be able to see one of the two. And I want to be able to see if I can actually film, you know, the thing here. But in my mind, I was like, well, if I can't see the bull or Manano, they can't for sure see me. And I could put... position myself closer to the edge of the brush.
So you tried to make a move.
So I tried to make a move while I was calling.
Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously I hear the bull spook. There's a short video where you can see it kind of running away. Then I try to call him back.
You know.
But it was too late.
That's a good point, though, that you bring up, because we're always talking about people being aggressive and moving on mm-hmm. in on elk. But I think it's important to note that that's what we're talking about, a shooter.
Right. Yes.
Because when you're calling, you're being pegged.
Yeah, you move in the pinpoint. Right.
Yeah, yeah, that elk is pinpointing you.
He knows exactly where you're at.
Yeah. Yo, I want to add, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Unless you have cover terrain that's given you the advantage mm-hmm. to be able to still move, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you're up on the skyline, you're mm-hmm. up on the mm-hmm. top of the ridge, and that animal is looking for you, and you make a move, and it's...
Yeah. And look, that was a hard lesson learned, mm-hmm. And it broke my heart, because I told Manano and Bitoko on the way here that my goal was to be able to call a bull in for Manano or anybody, right?
You have done several times, bro.
But I mean, mm-hmm. be able to harvest the bull right, that was being called in. But you know, it definitely taught me a lesson that I know now I won't forget. And the other thing is, like, even though you don't see the bull, because of the exact same thing you're explaining right now, right, they could probably see you. Mm-hmm. The angles are so different in a mountain. The sun is shining. You know, I might have been in the skyline being hit by the sun square in my face. Yeah, and
you
that
have
bull.
To know that you're hidden by terrain or vegetation,
yes,
in order to make a move.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yo, I wanted to bring something that I think it's a rookie mistake we have made. So we were discussing about communication while we are in this situation.
Sure.
Because it happened to us in Colorado. It happened to us in New Mexico like 2 years ago, and it happened again. Mm-hmm. We were trying to find a way to communicate each other when he can't see me, mm-hmm, or while he's raking or something. Mm-hmm. So
that's a tough one.
It is.
Turns out that the Mr. Pollito, as he goes,
AKA
Pollito. He said that's illegal, I think, and I haven't Googled it yet, but I will. But it makes sense.
You were talking about using radios.
Communication.
Well, we tried through the Bluetooth, mm-hmm, and of course didn't work out. So because it's a distance. So, but it totally makes sense.
I don't know. There's guys that communicate over radios all the time during the hunt.
So. Yeah. It depends on what state you're in.
Yeah. I'm sorry?
Depends on what state you're in.
Yeah.
Something to look into.
So it's something to look. And you can tell if, well, the experience we got with hunters with a drone.
Yeah.
We got that thing coming too. So I just wanted to bring that rookie mistake because somebody can, you know, made that mistake.
I don't necessarily think that's a rookie mistake. It's happened to all of us.
Right.
If you've done this long enough, you get separated from your hunter, and you're just doing the best you can.
Yeah, crap happens, man. That's part of elk hunting.
I think one of the things as a caller, and for me, is when I'm in a set calling, and I got a guy that I can see what he's doing, and he gets set, like he's going to, there's something coming in, my job is to go. And right, keep moving away from him so I can bring the bull back,
closer,
right?
Yeah, right?
And when we set static and you can't move, or maybe your terrain won't allow you to move, that silence gets to you, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, I ain't heard anything in a little while.
Yeah, we get edgy and we feel like we got to do something, right?
Yeah.
We step out and look and boom, man. Yeah. They on us like a rat on a Cheeto, you know? For me, as I've gotten longer into this calling thing, as soon as I see my hunter set up and like I know something's coming in, I'm going, right? I'm gonna try to drag the bull with me. Joe's one of the best at that. When he sees you set up, he's moving, man. He's going and calling, trying to drag the bull by you, you know. So
it's harder.
It is.
It's harder when the animals aren't being vocal.
Yes.
Yeah. Because when they are being vocal, it's easier to know, because you know where you left your hunter, you know where the animal is, and you can steer better, right?
And you can check his temperature.
Yeah.
You know what the animal's temperature is.
Yes. But when it's a silent situation, mm-hmm, and you're just seeing a movement, then it's got to be a little bit of a trust issue and hope that things happen.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, because you still have to pull it by them, right?
Yes.
Right. So, I mean, it is a tough situation. The only thing I try to do, like, if I have a shooter up there and I'm going back, right? What I have to do is I have to trust my shooter to say, okay, that shooter's going to now, I'm doing what I can do. So it's up to the shooter to make the correct moves. And if something happens that the shooter needs to change the situation, then they three cow call me and we make a change, right? So what I have to do is understand that I'm not in control of everything.
Yeah.
That I have to depend on my shooter to do what they can do.
Right.
They have to be active, and they have to take that role, you know. They have to be able to do that. So that can get tough, but it's something that all of us have to deal with, especially the thicker it is, right?
Yeah.
The more open it is, a little easier.
Right.
The thicker it is, a little bit harder. And especially when it's like this. Because, like, we've been hunting for days, and we've had encounters that we're used to having multiple encounters.
Yeah.
And we're having, like, working our butt off for a single encounter per day. And so when you don't capitalize on the, on that encounter, you like rake yourself over the shoulder. What could I have done different?
Yeah.
And, I mean, after you had, after I called that bull in for you, you know, you were telling me later on, you're like, wow, but I had this. What if I didn't? You know, woulda, coulda, shoulda. And it's good to do that, you know, to mess with that in your head to think about for the future. But there's just some things that we're not in control of.
Yeah, sure.
You know?
Yeah.
No, that animal, that animal's trying to survive.
Yes.
We're in, gosh, we're in thickest stuff that you can do, you know, and, you know, if you can get the opportunity and it happens and we can finish, yeah. I think we've had opportunities.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think one of the biggest things I would have to say is, and I appreciate Gilbert because he was basically doing a lot of calling, and so it's important when you set up and I say, okay, I'm going to go up here and I'm going to look. Well, when you're both together and you look, okay, yeah, that's a good spot. Well, you don't know if it's a good spot until you get there.
Yeah. Right.
And then,
yeah.
Okay, well,
especially
I'm going to have to move over here, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think it's very important as a caller that you go, okay, where in the hell is he? You know, you move and get yourself in position and you look, just like you say, all right, here comes a bull, where am I going? I got to be able to clear out of here and move. And so it's important, yeah, the very, very first of the of your setup that you have visual contact.
Yeah. I would let RC go set up, and then I would move myself.
Right.
Sure.
To,
exactly.
To complement that. Yeah.
That right. Doesn't
depending
mean
on the
that
wind
your shooter's
too.
Not going to move. Though.
No,
yeah,
that's right.
Right.
That's right.
But
well,
you got to be so aware of the wind, too, because if the wind happens
you
to
do.
Shift,
yeah,
and you have the opportunity to move as a caller
right.
in order to compensate for that wind.
And we're constantly and checking.
And
yeah.
I always do that. He goes like, please don't move. He almost get to the point. I said, hey, I'm going to go there.
Don't move.
Well,
no,
yeah, yeah.
I
just
go ways too far.
Yes,
man.
I always
wait out.
It's you know, it's my way. You know, I see you. I'll be there, Luis. So when I go there, I see, okay, that bull is not coming from here. I'm going to take that position because I'm going to get, you know, more
it's important for
and
the
I
caller
move.
For you to
so
get
I
set up.
But that's where, if you're going to move forward like that much, you should actually cow call your
caller.
Your caller.
Yeah.
Now he knows that, and it's okay to cow call because you're moving forward.
Yeah.
So that pinpoint
right.
changes.
Right, but it becomes more complex when you are in a flying V situation
yeah.
because
yeah.
now you
for
have
sure.
the other shooter that
for
hasn't
sure.
moved,
for
and
sure.
this one goes all the way over there.
Yeah.
And now you're like
in
what
a,
the
in
hell
a flying V, and what and for what our listeners, if you don't understand that, it's when you got two shooters out, and we're forming a V with a caller back in the back. In that situation, the movement should only be lateral.
Right.
Yes.
Not,
you
right.
know,
not perpendicular.
To the, yeah, you don't want to leave because now it becomes a safety issue for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Everybody.
Right. So, yeah, to move so that you have better shooting lanes laterally is okay, but you got to be careful of
I don't move when we are
flying V.
Flying V.
Yes.
I always move when I'm alone because
right.
I get to get, you know, get better.
That's where you just got to let
but
him
still
know.
It's an issue because he doesn't know.
He doesn't
where
know.
I am.
Yeah, right. yeah, you just disappear.
Yeah,
right.
I don't start my calling set until he's set.
Yeah.
When
it's,
he's set, and he'll actually, RC's been really good with me, is he'll point at me and go, all right, I'm ready. I got to go ahead and start, right?
Yeah.
So for me, it's really important for letting your guy get settled in. You know, he's going to knock an arrow, maybe clear a few branches out of his way, with some get his feet to where it's a lot more quiet if he needs to move, whatever it may be. But it's important for you to have that rapport with your hunter
yeah,
and caller. You
and
know,
that's why and the communication issue came out. So
yeah.
that's why we were discussing, hey.
I saw him several times put his finger to his ear and point in a direction. So I knew he was locked on something, right? He's locked on listening to something or whatever. He may turn his focus that way. And if he does this and I hear something coming,
I got to go. Right. Right. So, it's important for you to learn. And we talked about this before we hunted. You know, if I put my hand up there, he knew
that's a hunter.
That's a hunter. You know, I mean, we have hand signals, right?
Right. Yes.
Joe has them too. You know, when Joe wants you to get right here on his six, he puts his hand right on his butt and he taps his butt to get right there. Yeah. You know, we hear things walking. You know, I mean, it's simple stuff, but if you don't do it, it can really hinder your hunt.
And actually, in our academy, we have a lot of hand signals that we show people how to do stuff like that. Yeah.
Mr. Pollito asked you for the very first time, hey, what's the communication here? Like, we was like, yeah.
Which was great. Cool. It was great.
Yeah, he was so organized and you're prepared. He came really prepared.
He was like, tell you the truth, he was asking about the communication.
He's been through the academy. And he's listened to our
But I was like, yeah, this is Cal Cole. Yeah. This is like a bull, and this is a time for a drink.
Yeah.
So, it's not a mule. It's not a mule. It's a drink.
You know, it was brought up a while ago about the radios, you know. Yeah. In all honesty, I've been there with the radios.
I don't like it.
And I don't like them at all.
I don't
like
it. I said that.
I said the same thing.
It's like, they go,
they're loud. And they're bulky.
Now, you know, and I tell you what, 90% of the time when I was carrying the radio, I turned it off.
Yeah. Yeah,
right. until afterwards.
Yeah. I agree.
Right.
Yeah.
It makes it hard unless, you know. Yeah. Now, there are things that people use, even in the military, they use clicks, you know. So, like, if you want to test before you go over the air, you do a click so that they can hear it. But you got to have something in your earbud.
But again, check your local laws, because everywhere is different. Mr. Cody brought
up a good point. I'm sorry,
Jeff. I was just going to say that even when you get everything coordinated, there's unexpected stuff that happens.
Yes.
Like in Gilbert.
Yes.
What was your situation with Joe?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to acquiesce to Cody because he kind of had the second individual encounter, right? Or really first encounter, and decided that he was going to pass, and I wanted him to tell his dad's Mr. Kirkpatrick's story on the ratchet bull. So, for sure. I'll go right after you, Cody, but I want you to go ahead and break into that.
So, you know, after getting hurt, we decided to kind of change, you know, tactics.
Talk about you getting hurt.
Sorry. So, first day, you know, Joe had mentioned, you know, we started up, you know, plan A. We ended up plan M-N-O-P, whatever it was.
Yeah.
The downfall was so bad. I don't remember a specific event, but I ended up tweaking my knee. And so, you know, you think, it just kind of hurts a little bit. You're good. And, you know, about 4 miles later, I get back to camp, and it's starting to hurt pretty bad. That night I went out with RC and Joe, and we started up into a spot, and it just got progressively worse. And it just got stiffer and stiffer and stiffer. And I finally turned back to RC and I said, hey, if you guys are going farther from the truck, I got to turn around.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that it hurt coming down the mountain.
Yeah.
And
you said it hurts worse going down than it does going up.
It hurts worse going down.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so got to one point I had to, you know, sit on my butt and slide down the mountain. So, that gets kind of scary.
Yeah. Your knee was locking up.
Huh?
It was locking up.
It was locking up. And I just couldn't walk.
So you had to go to town and look at, right?
So, yeah, drove all the way to Taos and went to the ER there. And
they give you medicine or drugs?
Medicine.
Both. Both. Mama brought drugs.
So,
they gave me medicine. Mama brought drugs.
Advice. It's going to hurt.
Yeah. After the doctor looked at it, she said, you know, ACL looks good, MCL looks good.
Good news within the bat.
Good news within the bat, but it still hurts.
She says, a meniscus tear.
She says it's probably a meniscus tear and, you know, pain management. So,
I got to give it to you, man.
I sent Joe, I did a short video of, you know, I'm not going to quit. So, you know, whatever we got to do.
And that's what I was going to say. Some of that video right here.
Yep. and that's what I was about to get to say too. I got to give it to you because, you know, an injury like that here in the mountains is no joke.
Well, especially this steep country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And right.
Yes. We had Brandon steep. Get hurt last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Y'all remember?
Well, and
broke his foot.
If it's not steep, it's incredibly rocky.
So, I mean, well, you know, again, the same as with Monano and his cold, you going through this injury and working it through and not
quit.
Not giving in. I mean, because anybody at that situation would have, this is my luck, you know, I'm here, you know, hunting with the group and stuff like that. Now I get hurt just right before, you know, at the beginning of the hunt.
You put in 3.4 miles a day with me.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. And he with us as well, he was going over and under blowdowns and stuff like that, you know, and
yeah, he sucked
complaining all the way too.
What?
I was complaining all the way.
But today. Yeah, man, I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, we all knew your condition with the knee, but yet that, you know, you didn't let that stop you.
Right.
Let me ask you this. I know they talked about the story and everything like that, but I mean, now you actually, the whole goal was you coming in and hunting with us, right?
Yeah, right.
And so each day, you know, one day you'd be with me, a couple days you're with the Mafia, you know, today you were with Gil, and tomorrow we're going to finish off again, you and I. So talking about lessons and possible things that people might get out of this, what have you gotten out of it? Besides a lot of gas in the face.
Officially
except for the gentleman here.
Yeah,
there you go.
That's the only one. I'm
betting with him, so I, yeah.
Can you just explain to our listeners what he meant by the gas?
Well, yeah, let's change the topic.
You can show the video.
So what kind of things have you, how has this benefited you?
Confidence, I would say. You know, myself, just, you know, learning by yourself. You're, you know, do-it-yourself person. I've hunted all my life. I know... check your wind, you know, the basic stuff. But, you know, when I was with Gilbert today, he's like, hey, look up there. There's a bull up there. And, you know, having that confidence to really know that that's a possible place that they're going to be, so call towards it. And if you call in there and they don't come, well, they're not there at that moment.
Right.
Yeah. It doesn't mean that they're not there. They're just not there at that moment.
Sure. Right.
And, you know, I learned about, you know, like you guys discussed this summer, talking about cast calling and, you know, following you, you know, walking through the woods, you know, just making yourself a part of the environment instead of being a hunter. Mm-hmm. And moving, and Luis mentioned that just tonight, moving at an animal speed.
Yeah.
And, you know, not hoping for something, but knowing that a situation or a bull or cows or whatever are going to come in, but they're going to come in on their own time.
Yeah,
right.
Instead, on elk time.
Yeah, instead of trying to make something happen, you know, I found myself last year calling, like being really persistent, like, and then wondering, well, what the heck's going on? And the reality is, and what I found out by busting elk was, they were coming.
You just weren't giving them enough time.
Just be patient.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But
now I want to inject in it, though, is that because I hear a lot of people that listen to us and follow us, they'll go out, they'll go into the woods, they'll set up, and they'll start doing a scenario, right? And they're like, well, it's not working for me. And without understanding that there has to be a reason why you begin a scenario. Either there's a sign that's there, or you have visually heard something, or you've visibly seen something,
right.
Or you have smell or sign, a reason, or it's an area that is a type
point.
Of bench
yes.
that
yes.
has had a lot of activity that is should be a possibility that there could be an animal in there.
Yeah,
right?
Well, you know,
not just
depending on the
anywhere.
Time of the day, you know,
right.
if you're expecting the animals to come up to a bedding
yeah.
Area and, you know, there's that funnel. Mm-hmm. And you want to sit in there, you know, it,
Yeah, for a reason.
Like absolutely. Yeah, and I think that's important because so many people think like, okay, I go in the woods, I set up, and I start calling, right? And you've got to have a reason why you're going to be doing that calling there. Mm-hmm. Is it a water hole that's getting hit, you know, several times during the day, so you're trying to pull them a little sooner, right? Is it a food plot that you're in between that, you know, where they like to feed and where they like to bed, and so you're trying to pull them your direction instead of them going maybe 200 yards or 100 yards over to a side where you never see them, right? Or have you just caught a whiff of them because you're in an area where maybe you're a little bit above, and because they're moving up and you've caught a smell of them coming that way, well, instead of them going desired, maybe you can pull them toward where you are. So, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why, right?
Yes, go ahead.
So Luis was talking about that the other day when he was calling, and we got back to the bike, and, you know, he was like, and he didn't specifically say this, but he was painting a picture.
100.
Yeah. And, you know, he was saying, I not only know how to make the sounds, I now know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you made a call, we had a setup one time, and you're like, all right, well, I was playing like I'm an individual cow here, and then all of a sudden I introduced a bull, and then I, you know.
Telling a story.
Just telling a story.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
doing elk things.
You know, I learned that, you know, from you, and you know, I appreciate that.
This morning we did that several times. Yeah. This morning we did that several times. You know, we did the same thing. We introduced a lone cow looking, you know, for a bull, and then we brought the bull in, and him yearning to get her to do what he wants, right? Displaying with some raking. And we did that because we're in a pinch area that, man, it's had bulls, you know, and they're not really sounding off. So I knew when they came, they were going to probably be silent, but I wanted to appeal to their nature that, hey, there's a cow down there. And, you know, when they hear that glunking going on, generally, you know, there's going to be some rutting activity, right. You know? So,
I've got one question, and, you know, we've seen sign, but I think that, myself, you see sign and you get stuck in the rut of thinking that the elk are going to do the same thing every single day.
Yeah, they're not.
Right.
And I think that could be, at least for myself, what I've learned hunting with you guys is don't get discouraged if they're not doing the same thing every day.
Right.
Because, again, they're not on our time. They're on their own time.
We tried something totally unorthodox today. You know, elk are going up from morning to afternoon, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they're going to head up top. And I'm like, this has been so unorthodox, the hunt. I'm going to do something unorthodox, and I'm going to go down into some bowls and see if they're down in there bedding. You know, we're going to try to get in their bedroom, you know.
And, you know, actually, that wasn't a bad idea at all, because as hot as it is, any areas that might have been a little bit cooler, dark, or, you know, especially in – so for all you guys that are listening – you know, we're up here in beautiful country right now. I mean, it's
11,000 some odd feet.
11,000. It's gorgeous. But because we have, and this has been a
beautiful.
Beautiful. But because it's been a struggle, what I've often told people is, man, when it's not happening the pretty, go ugly.
Exactly.
And what we've done is we've been driving an hour to go down to lower level in country that nobody is hunting. And we're finding bulls, man, down there.
Yeah.
It's still been a struggle because of the type of terrain we're in. But, I mean, but we're finding the animals.
So a good example of that from last year, Joe, when we first started hunting, when the season started, we started finding elk at 10,600 feet.
Right.
And then pressure came in, and then where did they go? And then we started going higher and higher to try to find them higher. It turns out,
They were low. Yeah.
So they were, you know, talking about unorthodox. Yeah. Those are the kind of things that you're having. You can't bucket yourself into a situation.
No, you have
You
have to think about what meets their needs. You know, where are they going to be able to have thermal regulation and where they can keep their body cool, you know, when it's hot? Where are they going to be able to eat, and where are they going to find water? And here's the tough part for us is that where we are now hunting in the lower country, water is very sparse. There's rivers, and these guys are traveling
miles
to get to the water. So the time of being able to hit them when they're coming back through to the trees or to the bedding, it's hit or miss because there's so many miles in between there.
Right. And who knows where they go in between
that. In between that, yeah. Right? Yeah.
So they go where they want.
Absolutely, man.
Yeah, a good example of it, he found a big old pond right on top.
And so there's
saddle. No, yeah, in the saddle. There's not much water around. In that pond, I mean, yeah, you see tracks and stuff, but no, it's not. They don't go water every single day.
No. So well, they don't have to do that because of the rain.
They have water and food everywhere.
Water hole. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they got every yeah.
Yeah, there's water. But down low, water is very sparse.
Yeah.
And so, I mean,
it's amazing. And another thing, Joe, it's amazing how these elk, they don't poop. There's no doo-doo.
Well,
there's tracks everywhere, but no doo-doo. No fresh
highways.
Doo-doo. Okay.
I think it's been because it's so dry.
It had to be,
because
RC.
Because it's just, I mean, you know, what little we did find, it's real, real dry.
Yeah, so we were... It's so funny because it's been so far and few between finding droppings that we're taking pictures.
Hell yeah. I'm going to give Joe a picture and you can smear it.
Proof.
You
know?
They do exist. Yeah,
they do exist.
Tracks everywhere, no doo-doo. I mean, you know, there's rabbits around. We see rabbit doo-doo. You know, we see deer doo-doo.
Mule deer. Yeah.
Yeah, mule deer doo-doo. Yeah. But, man, it's been... I should say scat, right, or dung.
Well,
if
you're not in some place, like if they are moving constantly, unless you find those areas where they are like staying and feeding or staying and bedding, you're not going to find the droppings like that.
I guess, man. Yeah. You know, we managed to find some wallows down there too that are used, but they're not used every day.
Nope.
They're nomadic elk, and they move through. And for us, it just means you got to be there at the right time, at the right place.
Just gotta keep working.
Yeah, okay. And then capitalize on the opportunities you have.
Yeah, I mean, with that, I mean, about looking for different opportunities, you went to explore a different area, right, with your dad.
Right. Well, because I was injured, we decided to, try to take it easy.
Easier country?
Yes.
It wasn't easy.
Yeah. You didn't want to straddle any more logs?
Well, it was easy because we didn't hunt too far from the truck. So, but yeah, we got down on a ridge down there. Just went out on a point there, and I was calling. Dad was back at the truck, and we were really close to the truck. And so I just started calling, doing scenarios, just cast calling. And so while I'm calling, I go quiet and I'm listening, and it's just deathly quiet, except I start hearing this, just extremely loud, and I turn around, and my dad is sifting through a junk pile that somebody had thrown out on the side of the road, and he found him a halfway decent ratchet strap. And so he was testing it out.
while you're trying to call.
While I'm calling, trying to listen. And so I turn around and look, and I'm like, what in the world's going on? He's over there like this. You know, just really making sure it works, because he's taking it home.
Yeah. And down in a pile of junk.
So I look at him, I'm like, I just put my hands up like this. And of course, you know, he just puts his head down like a little kid that got caught with, you know, a hand in the cookie jar. He just drops his ratchet strap and he walks back to the truck. And I'll be dogged. It wasn't, you know, very few minutes later, all of a sudden a cow shows up.
And the ratchet cow.
The ratchet cow. So, anyway, she came up to the top of the hill, and just like we were saying, they're quiet. She made one call trying to locate where I'm at. And so I answered. Of course, she came right to me about, you know, 16, 20 yards. Stopped right there. Rookie mistake. I was standing right there in the middle of the open. Of course, who would think that something would, you know, a bunch of cows and and a bull would come up to a junk pile, but evidently they do. So she came up there, pegged me, and then she kind of blew off. And, you know, from watching you guys and listening and going through the academy and everything, I went ahead and called again towards her because I knew she didn't really know what I was.
Right.
But I did just a soft calf call, and boy, she came right back up to me again. And so I passed. I just didn't draw. You know, you're in the moment.
Right.
Hindsight's always 20/20. I should have shot her, but what do you do?
It's all right.
So then I turn around and I look at Dad, and he's leaning up against the truck right by the ratchet pile. And he's watching some other elk across, and there was another big bull in there. And that cow ended up going back around there. He chased her around, and they took off. So
he said you weren't ready.
Dad's claimed I wasn't ready. I mean, who would think? I mean, you turn around, a guy's over ratchet strap. You're like, all right, well, this is over.
This is over, yeah. We just want to go home now.
And that's the thing, man. It's just like with these hunts, you know, if anything, what I've seen and learned over the years is that your hunt can change in a second.
You know, when you least expect it.
Yeah, it could go from like a complete just chaos, nothing going right, to just all of a sudden you're, you know, in high cotton.
Yeah, you know, the legend and I had something real similar happen to us. And it's a learning moment for all of us. It was so, the deadfalls and the blowdowns are so bad here that very hard to, even while you're cast calling and walking through the mountain, have an arrow knocked up ready, because it's just a safety thing.
I noticed that today. You had one knocked the whole time.
Pretty much knocked, yeah. And I was managing not to get in too much of that bad volcanic rock. Mm-hmm. You asked Joe, last night I had one knocked pretty much all the time, but when we started down, I said, whoa, Joe, I got to get this razor off the end of this thing. Yeah. So RC and I had, we were hunting a little ridgetop area that, look, and shout out to Chad, the local here, where we're hunting. He gave us a little tip on where to go. And,
Belleville?
Yeah.
Belleville?
Yeah.
Belleville.
And anyway, shout out to Brother Chad and you know, giving us some local information, and we used that local information. There were a lot of elk sign up there on that ridge, but it was old, you know, a lot of old sign. Cool. So, go ahead.
There was somebody else that gave us some help, too. A young fellow that listens to us.
Richard. Yeah, Richard gave us a lot of help.
Hey,
too.
Richard, so, shout out to you, bud.
Peace, brother. Thanks so much for all your help and all the you know, using maps and showing us where we should be, where we shouldn't be, what we need to be looking for. I mean, look, we're elk hunters, but you know, you local people that know this area and that chew the dirt every day, we sure appreciate the help reaching out and helping
Chad
us.
Chad had listened to the Elk Bros, too.
Yeah, Chad, we met Chad on the road, and, man, he was like, oh, man. He goes, I recognized you. That's the mafia. Where's the legend? You know, so it was really cool to meet him on the trail, man. Yeah. I mean, he's up here doing his thing, getting his groceries and whatever else he needs.
He drove us up there to the spot.
Yeah, he was. He actually drove and let us follow him up to the spot. Said, if I had 3 days or 5 days to have fill a tag, it'd be right here on these ridges, right? Mm-hmm. So he's killed some bulls there. Yeah, so
the only thing is, what's been happening historically is not happening now.
No, that's right. Yeah, and even the locals are like, whoa, man, this is so different. Wow, especially when they come up here and see the blowdowns in the deadfall. Right. But RC and I had a really good morning. We started out in easing up that ridge, calling and setting up scenarios, and, man, it was really awesome. I mean, the way we did it, we had the wind in our face, the sun at our back. I mean, it was so good. But we just didn't have any activity. I mean, nothing really coming to us, nothing talking to us. The day before that, we did have a bull talk to us. He just kind of barked at us. I think he caught our wind down below us on that same ridge. But never saw it, you know. So we got the wind easing up through there, and we top out on the very top of the ridge, right? I'm not known to going to the tops of ridges, man. I really like them mid-level things. I dig it.
You don't want to gain or lose too much elevation.
I don't want to gain or lose elevation, man. Absolutely. So we told each other we're going to go to the top, and we're going to find out what's up there and how it looks, and just see the blowdown. Yeah. Situation, right? So we got up to the top and we're huffing because there's no air up here. Somebody sucked it all up. And at 12,000 feet, you know, 11,500, wherever we're at, we're huffing and puffing. And I happened to look to our left, and we're standing in this, just in front of one of these big blowdowns where the root system sticks up.
Yeah.
So we kind of got a backdrop. I happened to look up. Man, I'm just, the luck that we've had has been good luck because we saw something, but the finishing part was not where we wanted it to be because we really weren't ready, you know. But going through all that stuff, guys, it's really not a smart idea to have an arrow knocked up. But when I turned and looked to my left at about, I don't know, 17, 18 yards, in walks a giant cow, okay? I mean, one of biblical proportion. She comes walking into our lives and walks within 8 yards of me and RC, and we're looking at each other and looking at her like, oh my God, there's an elk! You know? I mean, I'm like, oh my gosh. We're looking at her, and she has looked at us twice and not paid any attention to us. And I'm like, okay, we're going to let her walk by us, and then we're going to get us an arrow knocked up, and we're going to call her back, right? Yeah. So no sense in trying to booger in her, you know, and he had the same idea. So we're standing there, statues, I mean, stiff as a board, but, you know, not even trying to breathe, you know, and slow the breathing down from us huffing and puffing, right? Well, she gets to kind of my right side, and she's going through. She's still at about 8-9 yards. I turn and look where she came from. Here comes another cow, right? A yearling, probably a 2-year-old or something like that. And she's coming just like mama, and she's right on her heels. And then I'm thinking, okay, maybe there's a bull with them. If she comes by, we're going to get an arrow knocked up and get this deal done. Now, look, we might have had to have a loaf of bread and some sandwich material to eat them up there on the top of that ridge. But I know one thing. I got my bros here, and they're going to help us get her down.
Absolutely.
Right?
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's TECOVAS.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
So RC and I both make the move to get an arrow knocked. Well, little girl sees the movement right at on my six here. She sees the movement, and she pops her head under a limb and looks at us like, hey, man, I wasn't there before, right? And she looks at us up, down, like that, and then, boom, man, she blows out. As soon as she blows out, we get an arrow knock. I get mom turned, right, but no shot in I mean, it looks like this in there, you know, all blowdowns and everything. We get Mom turned, but she actually blew out even further, and Mom went with her, you know. So here we are, you know, sitting up there. Now we're boudet-ing to one another about, what in the world have we done wrong? We did all of this right. Get up here, and then we get slam dunked by old girl and little girl. And, I mean, it was just, and look, I'm, guys, if y'all know me, you know, I love to shoot bulls, but if a cow gets in my way, shame on.
You don't discriminate.
I don't discriminate. No, we're going to eat elk meat, right? So, RC and I sat down and had a little bit to eat and talked about the scenario. And, you know, you can list that as a failure point and not having an arrow knock. And I guess, you know, when you top out in an area or something like that, maybe it's a good idea to have an arrow knock because you never know what's going to be coming in. And I've lived by that all week, right, because I learned from that. But I won't suggest you guys doing it when you're going through the deadfall.
That's a tough one, man. I mean, you know, generally – you're going to have a reason. You've either heard, seen, or, you know, feel something. And so you, and I tell people, if you ever have a feeling that you need to knock an arrow, knock one.
Yeah.
You know, for that moment. But yeah, I mean, it's hard. I don't always recommend somebody to be walking.
If somebody's
around with a
going to the restroom while you're up in the mountains, that's a good point. A good moment.
If I'm in good terrain and I've been cast calling, I'm gonna knock an arrow.
Yeah,
because I could have bulls coming to a silent.
If you're in a scenario where that's happening, absolutely, there's a reason why that's going to happen there. But I mean, you guys are just grunted up a hill.
Oh yeah.
You know, going through all that stuff, and then you get up there. I mean, 100 times, there's no way people would have an arrow knocked in that
You'll
situation.
See the video here, right here, where I say gloom, despair, and agony on me. I mean, seriously, if we had no bad luck, we'd have no luck at all. I'm showing my age there, a little hee-haw throwback. But it was just that way that day.
Let's talk about bad luck, good luck, because I'm not sure what...
Day two.
Yeah.
Myself and the Mafia, I had an idea of a place that I wanted to go.
Yeah.
And you did. Gracefully.
Yeah. Joe was wanting to make sure. He was testing to see if we were...
He was checking on us.
Yes, he was making sure we were in good shape.
Yeah.
You know, right off the bat, day two. It's like, okay, let's see if this guy's have really been
day one, I've already tore up Cody's knee.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So day two, I might as well go take the Mafia.
Leaves more hunting for Joe if he injures everybody.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's my role. That's my role, man.
I got the whole area.
So we did a bit of a hoof, man. And
A bit.
And let me tell you, I mean, we went from the bottom of this canyon up and over into an area.
We started from the top.
Back to the bottom.
From the top to the bottom. Back up
to the higher top. All the way up.
This is supposed to be a horse trail. We did the horse trail on foot and more.
We hit the horse trail right on the top.
Yeah,
but we walked to the
So one of the positive things out of this was, something that we acquired that the whole crew used on this hunt was something called the bow hitch. And for you guys don't know of the bow hitch, it's the greatest thing.
God bless Armando.
Yeah.
Armando and Doug produced the bow hitch.
Thank you so much, guys.
If you're interested in it, look, we have each purchased a bow hitch. We have it on our bows. We have an Elk Bros edition on there. But, and I can tell you, Luis is the type, when I brought it into camp for him, Luis is the type that's like, okay, I'm going to try something, but dude, you know, I can't tell you if I'm going to like it or not.
I was hesitant. I'd seen you use it before, and I don't know. You know, I just, it didn't quite
convince
me.
Well, we've always carried our boat.
So after the day of going up to planet wherever we went to, right? What did you think then?
No, I mean, I made a video of the hitch and, you know, talking through my thoughts on it. You know, I was hesitant initially. Super easy to install. We just installed it here with an Allen wrench at
you know, it didn't have to add anything or take anything away from the bow. It just attaches right to, you know, where your scope or your, where your sight attaches. Mm-hmm. And the versatility of being able to adjust with that strap where how, you know, how high you want it on your sight. I've tried different devices for that purpose
for carrying
in the
a
past.
Bow. Yeah.
You know, I tried, you know, I've tried the slings before. Don't like them because you can
to get from a sling
in a quick
position to shooting.
Yeah, yeah, in a quick situation where you have to kind of right. really react quick, the sling doesn't work out really right. good. I tried something different from a company I like and use. It's that you put in your belt mm-hmm. and then you tie a little knot around your bow, and it has a little hook that latches on that belt device, yeah. but you're carrying the bow vertical, so as it's great for when you're standing and you need to rest it, but not for walking with it.
Right.
Then I also use the hook
yeah.
that sits on the side, but then that hook
hangs.
You know,
it gets in everything,
and then you right. have to have it balanced, and it gets in everything. Yeah. So this thing, you just kind of put it in the loop around your strap on the side. The bow sits perfectly balanced. Yeah.
Horizontally
to where you have good clearance below you, and you can walk, especially when we're calling, right?
Yeah, man.
I mean, you're manipulating between diaphragms. You have your grunt tube with you, and then what? You know, if you have the bow there to worry about too, it just makes it so complicated. But this bow hitch was a game changer for me, Joe. Yeah. I mean, I have to say it honestly.
I didn't have one. I was the only one out of the group, and I got to follow guys for 20 odd miles or however far we went this week.
Yes, sir.
And, you know, I told Joe today, I said, hey, I want one.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, because I just saw.
They've been an absolute game changer for us. Armando and Doug, man,
thank you.
We couldn't have done what we did, doing what we've done
in the country that we were
in without the bow hitch.
So I found myself trying to climb over blowdowns and stuff, needing both hands. Had I had a bow in my hand, it would have been so dangerous.
How about when we were coming down?
When we were coming down the hill.
Oh, man.
I mean,
So on that, but I want everybody to know, on that trip, I told these guys, I really think there's going to be some elk in there. It took us an hour and a half of hiking, which isn't bad, you know.
Like this.
and we get in there, and we call a bull in.
Yeah, I saw we were walking on the side of a ridge, and we just kind of stood there on the side of a ridge looking down at a park. And we're sitting there for a little bit, and I look up, and all of a sudden...
I had put on some scenarios.
Yeah, you've been calling the whole time as we were coming down, and you were, you know, making some calls, and all of a sudden I'm standing there, and I look up, and I see something brown within the green, way on the other side. What, 400 yards, maybe?
357.
357. There you go.
To be exact.
I'm like, what is that? So I pull my rangefinder, and sure enough, man, there's a big bull there. And then where? It's hard, right? It's so far away, it's hard to kind of explain exactly where it was. And so I kind of pointed them in the right direction. I said, man, you call me crazy, but he's looking straight at us. Obviously, he's got us pegged by the sound. And, but, I mean, we were within cover, you know. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, he just stood there, and we were kind of staying. And he didn't like it. He turned around and kind of went up. And he was right at the base, you know, right at the tree line from the park to the dark timber. And so... Joe,
I put on some more scenarios.
Yeah, Joe threw out, you know, some more calls and started calling and calling and calling. And we kept looking in that direction, and sure enough, another bull goes by.
A smaller body size.
I think it was probably a cow or something like that. And then we see a spike that comes down. But it was funny because as you would see
window. We were leaving, actually. We were going down, mm-hmm. and Joe spotted, like, hey, there's a bull coming.
Yeah, because the third one that came in, it went down, and we would lose them. And it was almost like if there was a terrain depression
like
there.
Like a little corner we couldn't see.
Between the park and the tree line, right?
I see a trenache.
So
since I've been here.
You haven't seen a trenache yet?
I'll show you one.
Oh, we'll show you one tomorrow.
Show me one tomorrow.
We'll show you a trenache.
So we were like, okay, Joe is like, he kept on calling, and then we got to thinking, it was like, well, let's play the wind ride and see if we can kind of get closer to see. Obviously, there's some activity on that side of the ridge. And so as we started kind of executing on that plan, mm-hmm. walking the side of that ridge, we're working in this order, right? Joe is in front calling. I'm behind Joe, and Manano is behind. And Joe is like, oh, wait. And I, you know, we all froze, right? Right where we were at. And Joe looks up and is like, there's a bull coming. And there's a tree line or a bush line in front of us, between an open downhill and
a beautiful open downhill.
A beautiful.
A very extreme downhill.
Yeah.
It was a wall.
It was pretty steep. And so we're walking on the sideline, and we have this trees in front of us kind of protecting us from being spotted. But I couldn't see the bull coming up until it was like, I don't know, maybe 90 yards, you know, running up the hill. I mean, amazing how these animals can just come up the hill in no time.
No time.
Yeah, it was crazy.
In no time. So Joe just kind of keeps calling, and, you know, I look back, and I see Manano behind some trees where he has no shot, he can't see the animal. And then I see I'm behind a tree, and then there's a small little window on my left with a branch on top.
It was a limited situation for him, so he knew he had to change it.
Yeah, and then Joe was on the front side, so I'm thinking, well, this bull's coming straight up. If this bull comes up, he has two choices. He's either going to take a right or going to take a left. If he takes a right, I know Joe's going to take him because he's going to be broadside. But if he takes a left, I have to do something about it. Yeah. Because I don't, as of now, I just got, you know, trees in front of me.
Sure.
So he comes up, and then he gets to a point where he kind of hangs up, and he kind of doesn't like the situation, and he boogers.
Yeah,
and he boogers with his antlers down like that, and he goes to the left. And I'm like, oh, crap. So as he gets behind trees, I try to kind of move closer to that opening.
So you have better shooting lane.
So I had a better shooting lane. And then Joe calls him back. But when he starts coming back again, I'm still in no position because it's, again, very steep. And there was a branch above me, so I had to get myself on my knees, and I didn't have a good window. So I start slowly creeping in. He comes in behind a pine, and I take that opportunity to set myself in position. So I had one knee on the side, one leg back. I mean, talk about a crooked position. But I was in position, and then at that point, I think he heard me, and he boogered again. Mm-hmm. And Joe called him back. And when he comes back, I had range a pine in front of me that was at 20 yards. And I had range a set of junipers that were at 40. Mm-hmm. So when he starts coming in, he comes right in between the two and just comes right out in front of that pine tree. And I'm thinking, well, he's at 30. And so I'm in this position now. I drew before he came out of in front of the pine tree. And I'm downhill. And I'm thinking, I heard Beto saying, if you're shooting downhill, you may use the shallower pin, right? So, look, my rangefinder has the ability to give me the inclination and give me the actual shot distance. But in the moment, that's what we talk about. It's so different to shooting targets and being in a situation because everything happens so quick. And I made a mistake. I shot him for 25 yards. He was at 33 when we finally confirmed where he was. At the moment I shot,
and alert.
He was looking straight at us. So when I shot, I mean, I could see the arrow following that 30-yard trajectory perfectly. And as the arrow was getting there, it was going to miss him anyways. But he was pivoting out.
So I'm going to tell everybody the true story.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't have my life.
Yeah, I was there.
The hand of God. The hand of God, just as Luis took the shot, the hand of God
swatted
came down and smacked that elk in the side of the head to turn him and go, no, not today. We got saved on that day because we actually,
you got a plan.
Yeah, we had a plan.
And I
had
arguably.
So I had a plan that if we took an elk in this area, there would be a road that we could get out on that would help us because we were so far in and because of the altitude, the height, and the speed.
Yeah, right. Because we kept asking Joe, it's like, Joe, what happens if we kill something here? How do we get it out? And it's like, no, there's a way that we can, you know.
So in all actuality, now if in hindsight, if we would have killed it, we should have come out exactly like how we went in. But the plan was to go downhill, to take this road. So we ended up exploring that possibility after he missed.
Negative.
And had the worst. Oh, my God. I mean, the blowdown from where we were to trying to get to the bottom took hours.
Hours.
It was extremely dangerous.
Tell us what you said to the good Lord, Joe. Tell us what you said.
Well, he hasn't realized. He realized it when he was in the middle of the wall going down.
You heard from God.
I was like, thank you, Lord, man, because he spoke to me that day.
You said, why?
Why am I in the middle? I was like, I'm all in the middle of this deadfall. Lord, why have you forsaken me? And this voice, it got kind of, you know, a little bit cloudy. Yeah. Everything started to happen. And all of a sudden I heard this voice say, who do you think smacked that elk?
So we didn't have to endure that.
Oh, man, because if he
would have been impossible.
If he would have shot that elk and we would have started down that way with it, oh, my God, it would have been horrible.
Somebody got hurt.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We ended up in the middle, and I don't know how we ended up in the middle of it. And then we're like, okay, well, let's try this other route. And so we tried the road, and there was a section of it that finally cleared up because of the angle of it, and you're feeling good. And then we end up on,
when we turn,
I don't know, probably a 50 to 60 degree slope.
Yeah, no, he's not exaggerating.
No doubt.
I know.
No doubt.
We
hit the trees, and I go,
Manano, you know, who loves people dearly, looked at all of us and said, every man for themselves.
I'm out.
I'm going my way.
On my way.
No, he goes like, okay, let's go this way. Yo, I'm going down.
He says, guys, because we looked forward, and I mean, it was disheartening. I mean, you looked at it and you're like, how in the heck? Yeah. And are we going to go all the way back? What are we going to do? And Manano goes, we're going down.
You become so afraid of getting hurt.
Actually, I was afraid. We split it. Yeah. So Joe and Luis got to the right. I go to the left because I got like little highway for deer
trail.
So trail. So it just disappeared like 20 yards afterward. So I got in the middle, and it called my attention that you go, you know, you continue to go down. Hey, there is a creek, and you walk like 200 yards. Then there is a creek.
The volume doesn't change.
Yeah,
the volume of the water running is still the same.
And I kept, you know, reading 450 yards.
Yeah.
350 yards. Man, it was like
we've had climbs like that. Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doug Over and I had downhill climb like that.
Oh,
gosh.
And you would...
How far do you reckon, Joe, we went? Like,
you know...
1,000 feet?
Oh, yeah. 800 feet. At least 1,000 feet.
And there was a point where we were, you know, because of the yards there, we were like 1,500 feet, you know, up there and in that slope.
Sure.
And you find yourself... It's not only trying to find a route, but you're trying to find a route now
with
over
blow
down.
Yeah.
Right? So so I find myself grabbing stuff so I didn't end up 300 foot down the hill rolling, right. You know?
I tell you another thing.
And what was funny was, dude, it was the last 3 feet before I stepped on the creek bed that I almost killed myself.
That
last 3 foot, man.
You know, the legend and I, our first day, we come down a ridge, and thank God we had walking sticks, man. That's another thing in this country up here. Those sticks make a huge difference when you're coming downhill and uphill, and then having the bow hitch where you can have both hands free and do what you need to do. RC and I had sticks that day, and man, we bailed off the side of this mountain.
Cody, right?
Yeah, no, I'm telling you, the first day, I got hurt, and I had sticks. Yeah. I had my bow on my pack, and I still got hurt.
Yeah. We made about a 10-mile hike that day, and 5 miles in and 5 miles back, and we bailed off the top of this ridge because of the blowdowns were so bad. I never went that steep down, and I'm telling you, I couldn't have done it without the sticks, you know, because it's dangerous. Yeah, I mean, once you get this going downhill, ain't much going to stop it, son, until you get to the
bottom. Talk about a heavy arrow. There's momentum coming.
Talk about a heavy arrow. It's some FOC right here,
some
baby.
Some momentum coming your way.
So, I mean, you know, navigating that stuff has been the challenge for all of us, you know. And that being so close, I mean, Luis has a very close counter. Joe has a very good conversation with our good Lord and Savior, and you know, he told you, who do you think, you know, who do you think stopped that elk from getting killed and y'all having to go through what you got to go through, you know?
It would have been a dramatic situation to where, you know, we probably wouldn't have been able to get that animal out of there.
No, yeah, sure. Absolutely.
And those animals actually responded. They actually responded to you. You know, the bulls have been pretty lethargic. I mean, Knox and I, the legend over there, we had a scenario in an evening where we changed country. It was the first time RC and I changed country from up here in the high country, drove an hour to a place that RC knew and had some knowledge of, hadn't hunted it before. So we dive in there, and that evening we show up, we run into the wind, hop a few ridges, turn into the wind, get up there, and I start calling and put him up in front. And, I mean, it's getting late. And all of a sudden, man, we hear a, that's it.
That's it, yeah.
That's it. And I looked at him, and I said, did you hear that? And he goes, I don't think so. I said, I heard a bull grunt at us. He said, well, let's get set up. So we set him up in the front. To my right side, I set up down below. It's starting to get low light. And sure enough, man, I imitated that. Like that. And, man, that you could hear the rocks clinking. You could hear him coming. His antlers hitting the cedars coming through. And I'm like, oh, my God, it's fixing to happen. Here we go, man. You know, every one of us is sitting here, lives for that moment, right? This is why we do this, why we endure the pain and the anguish and the agony of defeat at times to get to that moment, right?
Even enjoyed.
Yes. And we, here it comes, right? So RC and I are ready in that moment, and, you know, it wasn't that bull's day to die either. We got a little gust from the gods, and he just went totally silent. Well, as the light starts fading, I've learned something over the years of doing this is don't try to push it. You know, if we blow that bull out of there, we ain't got him to hunt anymore. So when he kind of went quiet, it got so dark I couldn't see my pins. RC really couldn't see the bull. We couldn't make him out down there in that ridge. So we just bailed out. Left him where he was at, and we bailed out silent, didn't say a word to one another until we went back down the mountain. But that was an encounter, right? Yeah. We knew that the bull was in there. We didn't want to blow him out of there, so we just backed out. You know, left him alone, didn't push the issue, didn't dive off on him because it was getting too low light. You know, he had kind of had the advantage with the wind, so we figured we'd endeavor to persevere the next day. And as Chad talks about, the next day, Joe comes with us, right? And Chad set it up perfectly, you know, talk about the encounter that Joe and I had. Knox decides he's going to go out on his own, and he's got his own story to tell that day as well. Joe and I get together and look, I've hunted with this cat for 13 years, right? And, when I'm with him, the confidence level is through the friggin' roof. Not only do I know I gotta have my A game together physically, mentally, the whole nine yards, because this guy demands a lot out of you when you're with him, right? And I feel that.
Everybody's laughing.
Yeah. Maybe nobody else will say it, but I will, because he's my coach and has been for 13 years, and I feel a certain type of way when I'm with him to give him that due respect.
Deliver.
Yeah, and deliver, right? And I've been, and I'm not tooting my own horn, but 99% of the time, when he does his job, I deliver, right? And we got into a scenario that morning where we put eyes on a bull immediately that was 1,000 yards away, right? And we glassed him. We said, man, is there any way we're going to be able to beat these rascals to the top? And if y'all knew me 10 years ago, y'all would have known I wouldn't have made it halfway across that field. But because of the work that this guy's helped me with and instilled with me and the confidence that he's instilled in me, he put his hand on his hip and he said, let's go. So we got in a little trenos that hit our that hit us where the elk couldn't see us. He listened to me two times when we talked about the wind and using cover to make our approach. And he was gracious in that. He didn't have to listen to me. Joe, when Joe gets in one mode, he's going, right? But he heard what I said. We did make an adjustment and got to cover. And look, we snuck right in there. We went from 800, 600, 350, 225, and those bulls and cows are headed up above us, right? We let them get up there, and then we took off and skirted around in front of them. Joe had a great plan. We had the wind in our face. One thing that helped me out was it's all lava rocks up on the side of that mountain. So Joe can't go real fast, right? So for me, that's a good thing, right? I can put it in four-wheel drive, and I can
have one speed.
One speed, slow and four-wheel drive. But I can put it in four-wheel drive and get in there with him. And I'm telling you, it's a win for me because we got in front of that herd. Mm-hmm. We got in front of them and beat them to their destination. So we get in front of them, and he sets up a scenario that I videotape quite a bit, and you'll get to see. Hopefully he'll put it in right here. sets up this calling that's just extraordinary. I mean, a couple of times he bugled back there, and I thought the bull was coming in, you know. So that's how good it was. So it didn't work out. We probably sat there 30 minutes, huh, Joe?
Yeah, 25, 30 minutes.
Yeah. So we're in that set 25, 30 minutes, and he's worried they're getting further away above us, right? So we take off in the same direction. We ease around there, get around there, and
I did some raking.
He did some raking, and even in that first scenario, he did some raking. Mm-hmm.
So what made you think that they were going ahead? Did you hear something? Did you smell something?
We saw their trajectory.
You just kind of a feeling.
We were approaching
into the wind.
We were, you know, because they're going across and they hit like a ridgetop that's going up. So you know that they're going to drop into a little bit of a depression in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I really thought that, and that wasn't a real deep depression before it went up on the other side. What I didn't know was I think they actually were starting to top out on the other side, but when I did the scenario, I think I turned them.
Okay. Turned the cows.
Yeah, I turned the cows, and the bull was following. And then when we got up on the top of the ridge after we just kind of started to break in, I did a little bit more there to see, because I really thought, because that was a deep in area, I thought they, and it was thick and it was cooler, I thought they might be in there. Well, they were. And the thing was, though, is as I started doing my raking and I looked down, I catch cows. I can see them down below. I look over at Gilbert, and Gilbert's putting an arrow on. And I'm like, he sees something, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I know that he's got something in front of him. So I'm trying to pay attention to what he's doing. But I'm looking down, and now it's not just cows. There is a calf
coming straight up to me up the hill. And here's the thing about what we do in this business, right? Is I'm in my head, I'm going, do I film? Do I put an arrow on? Do I film? Do I put an arrow on? You know, I'm like, because I know things are getting ready to happen with Gilbert, and I wanted to get that to happen. But this calf, next thing I know, this calf is 12 yards, 10 yards, 5 yards, 2 feet. This calf comes up to me 2 feet, and right behind the calf is a big cow, right, coming up. And I had knocked an arrow. At that point, I decided, okay, I'm going to knock an arrow as it's coming up. But I'm just standing there, and I'm looking at Gilbert, and I'm seeing him trying to edge, and I can see him trying to find a spot, so I know he's got a critter in front of him. What it is, I couldn't tell. It's so thick in there
right.
that I couldn't tell. This calf comes up 2 feet from me, stops and looks at me, man, and then all of a sudden catches my wind and just blew up everything.
Yeah, and yeah, Joe's winds are bad.
I start to fire out. They kind of like go, what was that smell? But with Joe, it's like, boom.
Yeah. I can attest to it.
Yeah. Again, man, we're in the scenario, Joe's raking and everything, and I hear a, that's it. That's all I heard. It sounded almost like a moose, man. And then I heard clinking of rocks in those volcanic rocks. And then I heard his antlers hitting the cedar. And then I look up and I see antlers over the cedar coming. I'm like, oh my gosh, I got to find a way to move, right? Because I got this in front of me, right? So I see a hole. I see the bull coming down. I see his feet walking. And I see a hole about as big as a pie plate where I could probably shoot 25 yards through there, right? And he's less than that, much less, right? He's coming down. So you got to understand the floor that we're on is all volcanic rock with cactus everywhere, okay? So it's really no place to kneel. God provided me a place to kneel down, okay? And I knelt down. I there was no way I can shoot standing up. I kneel down, much like you, got one foot out because it's a little slope, and I'm knelt down in there, and, you know, I'm ready to draw. I need that bull to take one step, guys. One step. 3 feet, okay? 3 feet. And I look down at Joe, and Joe's looking down, and I'm like, uh-oh, there's fixing to be something happening down below, right? Well, he's looking at the cow. And then he looked at me, and, I'm just in that mode. I'm not taking my eyes off the bull. I can see his eyeball, his neck, a little bit of it, and his feet. And I'm like, oh, my God, and his giant antlers. Guys, I'm going to tell you this. I've killed a lot of really nice bulls with this guy, Chav, and myself. And I'm going to tell you, this would have been my personal best. And Manano, that's right, Manano tape. Manano videotaped a really nice bull a few years ago that I killed. But this bull would have been my personal best. And I kind of know what I'm looking at when I look at him, and this bull had everything that you want. He's an older bull, really smart, had a few cows with him. And if that calf does not blow up, I'm going to tell you right now, he's coming to find Joe. Because Joe's doing everything he can to present himself as another bull in there with his cows, right? So he's going to come on down and find what's going on. And when the calf blew up, the whole thing blew up. Bull spun it to put his butt to, right? And I'm called to try to get him to turn around and look at me and get a different angle. Man, I'm moving in there trying to get a different angle. But as soon as that cow busted out with the calf, then the bull dove off down there with him, and they all ran up the other side. And Joe, so smart, man, he goes to a straight regathering. And, I mean, he's straight regathering. Runs up the side of the mountain. I push forward to get down to where I can see him, and then nothing's going on, so he bails back off and comes down there with me, and I hear something else coming. Well, he actually, with that regathering mute, calls the calf back in, and she's there, and then she catches our wind and shoots out of there again. But we are so, I mean, literally, guys, this much, and I arrow the biggest bull I've ever arrowed in my life, you know. And to spend time like that with my brother Joe, we haven't hunted as much together in the past because he's a caller, and he's produced a caller who loves to call and who loves to hunt with everybody. So having the special time to get to hunt with him, it's the first time we hunted together in, I don't know what, 2 years, Joe, that we've actually, gone on a set. And then the legend allowed us to go do that, and he went off on his own mission that morning, and I'm going to let him. Go ahead, Bubba.
One thing I want to, you know, because what Cody was asking, I want to give it a little bit pre there in that originally in the morning, I had already introduced a bull into that area. So right before we saw that bull there, I had already bugled off, right? So then they're over there and they start to move up. So there's already a bull that's been introduced in the area. So now as we, once they, I see them top out and we've lost their vision and we start to try to really parallel hard and get up there with them, because of the rocks and the way the situation was, I knew that we couldn't make that kind of racket without it being related. So I started, I didn't want to give away where that we were there, but we had to because of the noise. So I started, cow calling and doing a little bit of like, doing a little bit of huffing and little small chuckles, just nothing to show that, you know, that I'm a big bull or anything, but just something to get that idea in the head and so that they would relax from us coming up. Now, it's still taking a chance doing the huffs, but it does, when you're huffing and when you're sounding like a bull tending your own cow, it's not a threat to the other bull that has cows, right? Because you're not engaging him.
You're inviting the cows.
It's more like I'm doing my thing and cows hear, oh, there's a bull with some other cows, and they might become interested.
Yeah, and we knew if we pulled his cows, we'd pull him.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of even secondary to what we were thinking. We just really wanted them to understand there's some more elk in the area.
In the area.
And we don't want them, spooked because we're crashing and cracking and falling down and stuff like getting stuck with thorns and stuff like that.
So just like I asked you this morning, you know, you were calling real soft at the beginning. I think you ought to explain like chuckling. So I noticed like Luis, when he was chuckling, it's not that high pitched, like real aggressive kind of sound. It's more of a inviting.
Exactly.
It's soft.
It's a real passive. I'm a bull and I'm here. And it's just, I'm not here. I'm not interested in scrapping with anybody. I'm just letting other elk know I'm here. An invitation, basically. If you want to come over here, any other bulls that you want to partner up, come on over here. You know, cows, whatever, right? So, it's not with the emotion and then like the hard grunt scream chuckles, right?
Right.
Yeah, you know what
it's
I'm talking about.
It's at the end of a bugle. It's at the end of a bugle. You notice today, I chuckled a lot more than I ever bugled, right? Just something real light.
And it was soft.
Yeah.
And it wasn't aggressive.
Right.
And it's,
these bulls aren't aggressive.
Just listening to it, you know, just from a person standing away, it doesn't sound intimidating.
Right. Well, it's not designed to.
Yeah.
Because they're not intimidating you.
You know, you listen to people on you know, I listen to a lot of different podcasts, and I've done a lot of different research, and, you know, somebody will say, all right, this is what a chuckle is.
Yeah.
Well, what you guys were doing was polar opposite.
Depends on the emotion, the intensity.
We can ramp that up into that chuckle that you're talking
about.
But it's
depending on the time of the year.
But it's
situation.
Not time yet.
Yeah.
Right.
The same with the bugles. I mean, the bugles don't necessarily need to be that big bull. I mean, especially...
I never sounded like a big bull today.
No.
It was all...
And he didn't either. Yeah. I mean, the last 2 days.
It was all just a location. Like this morning when we started out in the field, it was just a location broadcast, right? And then today when we were in our scenarios, it was more like, all right, I'm going to bugle just a little bit after I get done with my display.
Yeah.
Right? Not nothing hard, just...
Right.
You know, pretty much it, right?
That's where the animals are. We have bulls not bugling right now, right?
They're
not doing nothing.
That's it. I mean, you get a whoop. That's all you get. I mean, wow. And a giant 350-plus-inch bull is going to come in like that. It's wild.
You know, and we talked about that. I mean,
I can see a younger age bull not wanting to speak up, right?
Yeah.
Because they're, you know, they just want to keep their mouth.
They don't want to get their crap beat out of them.
But what we had was, we had a mature
herd bull
that had cows already not speaking up. And I think that's even smarter because I think that's a bull that, you know, generally these guys are waiting off in the wings and letting the small guys bring them together and then they do their thing, right? I think it's just these guys are like, well, I don't want to start bringing in satellites and fighting right now. I mean, I think it's a, he's just conserving energy and just
keep all the herd to myself.
Don't
tell anybody I got all these cows.
I think this elk, you know, as we as hunters have gotten better, they're evolving to, you know, they're learning when to shut up. They're creatures of habit.
Yeah. And it depends on the number of animals that are in the area, right? There's, I mean, we haven't seen a whole lot of cows in the area. We think there's a whole lot of lone bulls in there, but they're of different age classes, so.
Which means they're nomadic. They're going to keep moving around. Until they find cows.
It's been real interesting. It's been, you know, it's so funny. I mean, this is our 40th season, Chow.
Mm-hmm.
And we're always, these critters are always teaching you something because they're changing, they're adapting and
bolding. Yep, never told you learn.
Yeah.
Knox. So, Knox, lead us into what went on with you, brother.
Well, the thing about it was, is, you know, it was, we'd been down there the day before and it was, I was noticing the tracks, and there was a lot of tracks, and it was like, wasn't necessarily a highway or a trail. It was just a lot of bull tracks, and they were just meandering around.
Yeah.
Just going over here and going over there and everything. And so I was like, well, okay, this may be a pretty good little ridge here. And so when we let split up that morning, I looked at it and I got my sniffer out or my wind indicator, and it was like, this is not good. I mean, I can't hunt this ridge like this. I mean, the wind is totally wrong. And I said to myself,
Self. Legend.
You got to get on the other side of that canyon and on that other side of that ridge. And you got, I'm going, man, that's a long ways over there. I don't really know that I want to go do that, you know. And so I'm like, nah, I got to go. So I finally made it over there on the other side. And it's like I said, you know, I'm not hunting necessarily that ridge because the wind is wrong. But I'm hunting the opposite ridge because the wind is going the right direction up the, over there. So I'm about halfway up that ridge and going down the side, and I glance over there, and of course I'm looking at it all the time. And it's a funny thing when you do see an elk because you haven't seen any, you go, wow, that's an elk. So, I mean, he's walking and he's going down that ridge. And I'm going, all right. So I took off as hard as I could, bailed off of that mountain, crossed that meadow, found me a very nice Trinoche. Got in that little Trinoche.
Shout out to Tony Cosenza with that word. The late Tony Cosenza.
But anyway, I got in that Trinoche and kind of throwed my rangefinder up and said, all right, that's that and that's that. Of course, I'm looking on the left side. I'm thinking, yeah, okay, cool. You know, and so I got this sweet little old thing here. I tell you what, now that's the best thing there ever was. This little old pink thing.
Sugar, baby. Sugar.
Actually, sugar. That is chartreuse.
Yeah, chartreuse.
Magenta. This little
fuchsia.
Fuchsia. Fuchsia. Magenta.
Fuchsia.
The sugar.
Called
the sugar.
Oh, my
God. Grinder
gosh.
By sugar. Yeah.
I hit it twice.
The Wapiti River.
And it was like, I was hoping that I could get him turned, but I didn't realize I was going to get him turned that hard. He came off of that hill like in a dead run straight at me. And, of course, I was already knocked. I was ready. And I said, okay, if you go left, I got you, dude. You're, you know, no problem because I'd already taken all the time to check my distance and stuff. And I kind of looked at the right, and I went, oh, hope we don't go that way. So, nevertheless, he decided to go right, and he's got his head down on the ground, and he's at a dead run, and he's going, meow, 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 and he's smelling the ground, looking for cows. And so I got, so he goes right, and he gets about halfway, so I go to full draw, and I thought, well, I'll wait until he can, I mean, you know, all I gotta do is bugle or let out another mew, and he's gonna put the brakes on. Well, he goes around there, and he gets to where my trail had come up, where I had walked up, and it was like, oh, what's that? You know, all of a sudden he just stops, and I'm going, come on.
The full draw.
All you need to do one is take step. One more step.
One more step.
One more one step. More come step. On. One more step. I know what you're smelling and stuff, but one more step, please.
It's
know.
Not as bad as Joe or Beto.
Yeah.
No. That smell and is so not that bad.
Depends on who you ask.
He turns, of course, you know, he smells. He smells that scent and everything else, and he whirls, and he's leaving the world, and I called him back. Of course, I had let off, and I called him back, and here he comes, and so I draw it again, and of course, guess where he is? He's in the thickest stuff there is.
On the right.
And I trying to find a little hole somewhere in there that I can sneak an arrow in, and there's no way, and he finally just
boogered out.
Yeah. But that's why we call it the one step hunt.
Yeah.
So far. Tomorrow is going to be a different story, yeah. But.
So I also want, you mentioned the sugar, and actually what that is that's our prototype. We've been working with Travis. We already have the grinder out.
Yes.
And one thing I told Grinder was I wanted a pair. You know, we have the grinder that, you know, it's our, basically, it's, you know, it's a bugler that, well, breaks in great to doing cow calls.
Yes.
But
fantastic.
We wanted something that right out of the box would give a real sweet cow call. Yeah. And you don't have to use a lot of pressure with it. Mm. I mean, it's just so soft. And in fact,
absolutely phenomenal.
So, and I wanted a cow call so sweet that we were going to call it Sugar. So,
yeah, it is.
And let me tell you what, it's
as light as you can
it'll,
get it.
Yeah, it'll be so quiet, good. Light, coming out of the box. Everybody that's grabbed it has really...
Yeah,
oh my God.
I love the ability to, like you said, right off the pack, just with slight differences in pressure of your tongue, you can achieve from a mature cow to it, like a very small cow.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, that range of variability that
you can still get pretty loud with it. You can still get pretty loud with it, too.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I can push my lips together really hard and barely push any air out of it, and man, sound just like the faintest little calf, like that, like RC was just doing right there.
But if
there.
You start cranking some bugles on it,
it's not going to loud.
And look, I'm the world's worst at, you know, wanting to stay with the same thing. And so Travis O'Shea, our buddy's been killing it up in Canada, calling bulls in, knocking them down. We can't thank you enough for Sugar and for the grinder, man.
Yeah. So we know the form factor. All of us have used it on this hunt. We know what we want. We like the way it sounds. So that'll be being produced this next year. So.
Joe, I got to give a shout out to our boy Mark Carlson as well.
Mark Carlton. Yeah.
With the Rippet 1.5, I've been working on the Rippet 1.5. Joe and I had a little bugle off here.
I love the Rippet, man.
Yeah. The other evening, he comes walking out of the woods. We just decided we're going to dual bugles, and it was a lot of fun. But that call is, it's exceptional. You got to rip a bunch of bugles on it to get it kind of softened up for the cow call part. But man, once you get it really, really turned up, it's an awesome call. And then I've been using the Dirty Deuce as well. And
Dirty Deuce.
Look, you know, Mark, we can't thank you enough for supporting us here at Elk Bros, sending us some calls. We put them to work this week, and they've worked flawless.
Yeah, and
there's the other green call that he sent us.
Yeah, he's green weenie. The greeny weenie. But let me tell you, what's so cool about that is right now, Native by Carlton calls. Is going through a revamp, and when we get home from this hunt, before our next hunt, we'll have some of the newer frames and the newer calls that he is now making.
Can't wait to put
them. And we're excited about that for Mark, man. Yeah. And he does a stretch on his that really gives a nice high pitch.
Does.
You know, I mean, it's a high pitch stretch, and man, I'm telling you, that rip at 1.5. Oh,
I love it.
God, man.
Absolutely. That's what I was blowing today when we were doing our stuff. And I oscillate between that and the grinder. And
look, I'm going to give everybody. Look, I used also today when you guys were with me today, and you could hear those different calls. Right. I was actually using the Phelps. Yeah, but it was their Pitch Black number 2.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorites out there. I like calls that are like that. You know, I love our grinder for what it does, but I like to rotate the calls and do different sounds. And we have some exceptional call makers out there.
We do.
And, you know, if you learn to work those latexes, you can work any latex.
Right.
We actually got those calls for Hunt Wars because that's getting ready to start. So they sent some in there, and man, heck yeah, I love to use their calls when available there. But let me tell you, Mark, dude, man, I'm so excited for what you guys are getting ready to
all
put
of
out
here.
Because he has a lot of passion, and I really want to see Native by Carlton. We've wanted to love that company, man.
Yeah.
And you know, there were some things with some of the stuff with the tape that he's changing with the top. He's going to domes now. He's doing some different, really cool things with the frames. Look, y'all, get ready.
We had him on the podcast.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
He was awesome on the podcast.
Yeah.
He was like, look, we're going to send y'all some calls. Hey, look, that guy runs a business. So I ordered my own calls and from him because I knew he was going to send some to Joe. I wanted to practice with him before I got to camp and everything. Appreciate you guys getting them out as fast as you did. I got my order in, got my calls back within 2 or 3 days. And so appreciate you guys. Joe, I want to talk about another one of our grinders out there that has done something real special for our group, and that's Mr. Henry. Building us some really custom knives, right? Travis Henry, is that correct?
Tracy Henry. Yeah, so Tracy is an incredible human being, number one, and he has made custom knives for
all of us.
For all of us, right?
Told him I was going to have them in my pack.
And, I mean, they are built for tough.
Absolutely, bro.
They are incredible steel. And when he found out that we had a giveaway winner, he wanted to make sure that giveaway winner, Cody,
had
one of his knives, man. So we were able to gift you that knife.
Yeah, I'm just blown away. I mean, the craftsmanship and this thing is smoking sharp.
Yeah.
Sharp.
Man, he sent me mine, and it is, I mean, out of the package, shave you. And it doesn't happen a lot. So, Tracy, we can't thank you enough, man. We said that we're going to have you on the podcast. Joe and I will make that happen. But the thing that you've done for us as far as giving our winners knives, our Elk Bros knives, I mean, it's been phenomenal, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
many
Tracy.
Blessings to you
thank
and your
you
family.
So
thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. And so this has been we still have one more date tomorrow, so it's getting late, y'all.
there's one more step
today.
One more step.
Yeah, today we got a close encounter.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
We better talk. We better we'll close with that step, Joe. So you and the Mafia got in it again. Cody and I went and did our thing today. Got to spend some special time with Cody, and I hadn't got to hunt with him, so today we got to hunt together. He's a special guy, man, and a really good hunter, really smart young man, and I got to... You know, he's very questioning. He asks a lot of questions. And that, for me, being a coach and stuff like that, I hope he got something out of our hunt today and understood that we're just regular guys that love what we do, you know, and we promote that side of it, you know. So thank you so much for your kindness and hospitality today.
Thank you, guys.
I appreciate you enduring. I'm a passionate guy, and I believe an elk's around every corner, and I set up that way.
As you should.
But it was a fun hunt for sure. And although we didn't get to harvest anything or see an elk today, man, it was a lot of fun sharing the woods with you, brother.
Man, I've learned so much from each one of you guys.
Yeah, and we appreciate it.
I appreciate you guys actually sharing
both ways.
Yeah. So we'll turn it over.
Not only that, I mean, I've had a heck of a good time just hanging out with you guys.
Yeah,
like I told you, like when I first got on your podcast, I was like, you guys are who you are. And you guys are a lot of fun to hunt.
Right.
A lot of fun to hunt with. I just hope that I get invited back.
Yeah.
This is a lot of fun.
Yeah, for sure. We appreciate it, brother.
Thank you so much.
Joe, lead us into what went on today, brother.
So, you know, today me and the Mafia were going to go out together. We have that opportunity. And after the last time I took him out, I thought I'd take it easy on him.
Guys,
So we went out and into some of that lower ugly country, and I love it because it looks like some of the country that I really like to hunt.
Uh-huh.
And we just worked it, you know, as we were going. I'm using cow chumming as I'm going. We found a level, and we knew that these bulls were coming from one area to another. So we decided to get on the east northeast side of a ridge and work that where we seen a ton of tracks.
We got a good wind.
Had a real good wind for moving in it. And
today was great.
And so we were going through, and long story short, you know, as we're going, as I'm doing the calling, I'm taking a step and I hear cho 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 cho. And he got so excited, Manano, you know, because I heard the first joke.
Yeah.
And I stopped. But
he doesn't know. He doesn't know if you heard.
But yeah. That's always.
But he, you know, he was like, Joe, Joe, Joe. And he goes, 25. Bulls.
Yeah, because he was in front of me. And I thought, okay, Joe's ready to kill this sucker. So
the way we were, though, the way I'm on the left, he's on the right, he's seeing the bull, and I've got a bush in front of me.
Yeah.
Nothing. I can't even see the bull. So I'm like, I'm trying to see the bull. I'm like, where in the heck is this bull? And so I see Manano. We both knocked an arrow at the same time. As soon as he said bull, I'm knocking an arrow, right? But I don't see the bull. He does. So I just kind of move to the side, let him move forward.
Yeah.
And when he moves, the bull comes forward, and now I see him. But he's antsy because Manano, he sees Manano, and he turns to go away, and I made some calls again. He turns and comes back, and he shows himself broadside one way, then he turns and shows himself broadside the other way, then he turns back. It's like... I mean, and Manano is at full draw. And he's just looking for a window. He needed
one more step. You will see it in the video. Camera B made a good video.
You'll see the video right
You'll
here.
See the video. It's a close encounter.
Yeah, So it was really awesome. And you know, he had the case of the Verlaques, and he got really excited, and actually went off and almost got on the bull again. But I mean, it's a typical, that was the typical scenario that we usually see this time of year. We're working thick stuff, we're cow chumming, we're calling,
they're silent,
and they come in silent, and you try to catch them and get a shot on it. And that, you know, okay, so there have been plenty of situations. I've called in bulls now for three guys, and it's all been well, you got a shot off, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody else has been one more step, you know? Mm-hmm. So we're hoping that tomorrow Cody and I are going to head out. Hopefully we can get Chav in there by the wallow again. You know, Chav has every day, you know, he's been putting himself in the four-wheeler or in the T-Rex and taking off, packing in his stuff, getting in all the way into, you know.
It's a two-mile hike, bro.
It's like, isn't it a beautiful spot, man?
Yeah, I think under normal conditions that would be golden.
Yeah.
But this year just nothing showed up.
Yeah. So, I mean, I keep texting him. He's like, nope, nothing's happening. That's
time
how
to take
it is.
A nap.
So. Tomorrow, y'all, you'll hear about tomorrow in the next podcast. And, you know, we're going to chew over all of this that we've had. You know, it's been a great hunt. It's been a hard hunt. I think that's what's made it so great.
Yeah. Really. I've said this 1,000 times. It's the hard that makes it great, Joe.
Yeah.
It's why I'm so emotional every time we take one. You know, I get emotional every time I've ever taken an animal. You know, I shed a tear. Even the other day when Joe and we needed one more step. I mean, I was super emotional because you just work so hard, man.
Yeah.
You work so hard to put yourself in that position, and when it don't go right, man, you know, it's like somebody stole your rattle.
And a week from now, we have our Elk Bros Adventures crew coming in with our coaches, and they're going to be on their hunt.
So for our listeners that don't know, Joe and the crew, we've created Elk Bros Adventures, and so we are now a registered, licensed outfitter in New Mexico.
Yeah.
So
not wanting to outfit.
Not wanting to outfit.
Yeah.
We're actually bringing some. Joe's, you know, putting together some really good data and some really good things for where we're going to really turn the industry in a direction that's different, right? We're all coaches sitting here, Mr. Knox, myself, Joe, the Mafia. We're all coaches in our own right. Chav, I mean, has coached at various levels for his whole life. So we want to bring guys in camp like Mr. Cody and the new guys that are coming in that'll be with us in camp in 2 weeks, and we want to help them get better at doing it themselves, right, Joe?
Yep, that's it.
And that's our goal. It's a do-it-yourself type of thing.
Yep.
We're not guides. You know, we will be there to help you and be on your hip with you as well, but we are definitely are your elk hunting coaches.
And we've been with them already for 2 months through a lot of training and stuff over Zoom and communication. So I'm excited. As tough as this has been, you know, by the time these guys get here, we're hoping that things are a little bit more vocal for them, and they're excited. So we're going to get after it.
You've actually been through all of the sessions with us. You know, can you speak to that and how well you feel like it prepared you for when you got here?
I was always just checking my the WhatsApp. We were all talking together, and every day I'm like, what do you mean we're not having one tonight? You know, I'm like, you know, I was living for it because that's what I'm hungry for, the information. And every time I got on, I mean, I learned so much. I mean, Joe, you saw me. I'm writing it down. I mean, I'm like, this is good stuff. I'm writing it down.
I'll watch you for sure.
So, I would tell you that, from the very beginning and going through the Zoom calls and talking with you guys, my confidence just grew every single time. And it wasn't, you know, I would learn new things, but it was also kind of a, you guys would talk about something, an experience that I had.
Right.
A failure that I had.
Right.
And then be able to talk through why.
Yeah.
And then it would, you know, lights would go off and I'd be like, okay, all right, now I understand what I did, what I should do going forward. And, you know, coming out here and hunting with you guys, honestly, because of all of the Zoom and all the preparation, I wasn't intimidated, even though you guys are, I mean, you're famous, right?
Oh, man. We're making our own times. No, man,
infamous.
Infamous. Yeah, okay. Infamous. All right. Well, we can go with that. But no, the confidence that it gave me, and then, you know, spending the week with you guys, I mean, my confidence is through the roof. I've got another tag. In Colorado, and I'm just like pumped up. You know, it's been tough this week, and I haven't harvested one yet, but we're not done.
No, we're not done. We got 24 hours left. You know, the next time, our next hunt, we're going to have another elk hunting coach in here with us. The pimp in the box, the man from Colorado. You guys know him as the host and owner of the Western Contours podcast. Mr. Guy Duplanche will be in camp with us. I can't really wait to chop it up with the man with the golden voice. I mean, it's going to be epic. Yeah. I mean, Joe.
Well, my lower voice.
Yeah.
Well, Jack's voice.
So we love Guy. Can't wait to have him in camp with us. I'm going to get my truck put back together sometime. I have to take old Whitey back to Texas. It has been an absolute awesome podcast, guys. Really great content. It's been an honor to share the mountain with all of my bros and Cody and his dad. I tell you one thing, this never gets old, Joe. I tell everybody, it's like heaven when you get here, and it's hell because you got to leave.
Yeah, but, yeah, we work for it all year, man.
You know what? If you want any of your questions answered on our show, please go to info@elkbros.com. That's info@elkbros.com. And like we say in the Lone Star State, wives, kiss your husbands. Husbands, kiss your wives. Hug your babies. Keep your broadhead sharp and your powder dry. And we'll see you next week right here on Blue Collar Elk Hunting.
And a special treat for you from our cook. This is his music. This is him and his family singing. We're going to play this for you from some of his tunes he's recorded. We'll see you guys.
From Big Toco.
Peace.
Luna del Capalaparo.